I could say all the things that I should say, say them loud.
Peter R. Breggin, MD, is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Well, hello, 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 my wonderful, wonderful, wonderful audience. Once again, I arrive at 4 o'clock on Wednesday, and I know I have something important, enjoyable, delightful, valuable to do because you're out there and I get a chance to talk to you. I just finished at the last minute, the second part of a deposition in an electroshock case. And I tell you, it is wearing dealing with attorneys. It's not going to be wearing today because we're going to have one of the most exciting attorneys in the world on the show today. So I'm gonna skip, thinking about what to tell you about life or to share with you. Any news, because my guest today is news in himself. Steve, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
There you are. That's him. Steve Scheller. I want to tell you a little about him. Well, I've known Steve for years now because he's done such amazing work in product liability against drug companies. I've had him to speak at a few of my conferences. We talked about various issues and shared various things over the years. He has an astonishing wife, Sandy, who is a genuine partner to him in all of his work. He's a lawyer. He's a philanthropist. She's a philanthropist. They do a great deal to help the community of Philadelphia where he lives. Steve, I got his biography off of the American Law Journal, and they confirm that he is one of the leading whistleblower and plaintiff's attorneys in the United States. He's certainly the leading one by far that I know. I don't know who else is leading beyond that. And he does work in pharmaceutical product liability, consumer protection, medical device litigation, I mean, class actions, quitam cases. In fact, I did a part in a quitam case involved in your law firm, Steve. He has been doing a large amount of work in the area of Risperdal and Johnson & Johnson. And I think as we go along, we'll use them as a model for companies gone awry. Companies that appear as big as they are and as proud as they are to do more harm than good. Also along the way, we'll mention his books. Let me start out. His earlier book is Lawyering in Times of Saints and Evildoers. And his more recent one is about what we're going to be talking about today. And it's a book by a super expert, Farmageddon, A Nation Betrayed. Steve, you don't know probably that there's an earlier book called Farmageddon that my audience would have heard of. So I want to say that this book is a really, really good book. And don't mistake it with the previous Farmageddon book without mentioning that author. But some of you will know of him. Steve, it's an honor to have you. And I understand that other people feel honored in the same way. You got an honorary degree from Drexel. They must have felt honored to have you. I want to start out. I'm not sure I've asked this simple question before. Maybe I have. I'd like to start out and just say, what are you most proud of in this huge, big life? And if you want to share how old you are you older and younger than me? I'm 82.
Yeah, well, thankfully I'm almost the same age as you, and we come from the same era, and we've been battling for the people of the country to make life easier and better for them for many, many years, and I hope we can keep it up for many, many years in the future.
You know, Steve, when you've given talks at my conferences, people have said, you know, he could be your brother. He could be you if you'd gone to law school. And they don't say that about anybody else I know. So that's interesting in itself. What are you most proud, other than your children, whom you love to talk about, and your wonderful wife, whom you love to talk about, in your career? What's the stuff you're most proud of?
Well, the things I'm most proud of right now is that I'm keeping up the battle to deal with the pharmaceutical industry and the problems they have created for so many people in our country. And I am really proud of the fact that I have handled a number of whistleblower cases. In fact, several of the largest in the history of the United States, and gotten that money back for the United States of America and for the taxpayers. I would hope I would get some additional money back for the people of the country who have been injured by pharmaceutical misconduct. And I would hope that I can find a way in time that we can diminish it substantially and really get the pharmaceutical industry, certain members of it now, it's not the whole industry, back on doing work on behalf of the people of the country. We would do so much good and reduce Medicaid and Medicare expenses if they would just focus on helping and following the, I'll call it the Hippocratic Oath, which the medical community follows. Do no harm. That is something we've got to get back on track with. That's what I'm most proud of. Of course, I'm very proud of the long history I've had from the times I went to the University of Pennsylvania to the times I even now get an occasional honorary degree, as you see. And, of course, most of all, my kids who probably have more honor degrees than I can count.
The American Law Journal says that you've recovered more than $6.25 billion, not million.
Yeah. Billion.
For
yeah,
the US,
I think it's gone up
payers.
Since that last note, but it's about right.
Well, we've got a very heavy topic to talk about. Steve and I come from, as do most of my guests, from kind of different political perspectives. And yet we both stare at, as many of my guests do, this terrible reality of whether you come from a more left perspective or more right perspective or middle perspective, that corporations have gained so much power and so much capacity to do harm, and seem many of them to just have no ethics at all. As a general question, Steve, is it possible for a large, huge corporation like Johnson & Johnson, nicknamed J, shortened as J&J, and they own Janssen that originated Risperdal, is it possible for a huge corporation to be ethical, to put something ahead of the simple profit motive, like well-being of people?
I definitely feel it's possible. And I have another book that'll be coming out soon, and that's one of the things I'm talking about in the book. The real problem we have these days is this drive for money, greed. You know, I always said, if you recall, I said it at one of your conferences, the best thing the drug industry could do is to develop a pill to diminish their own greed. If we could find a way of inventing that pill, can you imagine what we could do for this country in medical areas and pharmaceutical areas? It's just so necessary. And it makes me sad that some of the lawyers that I'm friends with know well, they go to the top law schools in the country. I went to Penn Law. My daughter went to Penn Law. My son-in-law went to Penn Law. Another son-in-law went to Penn University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. What is going on with our universities? What are they missing in what they're teaching? What is? Why are our top brightest law students coming out and going to work and defending the misconduct rather than finding ways to correct it and do do no harm, as the Hippocratic Oath says? We've got to get back to doing that. I would love to have the people that are so active in politics now, instead of mad about conflict over what's the best thing for that and this, that, and the other thing, but join with me in this battle to improve the conditions of our people in terms of medical care, medicine. Can you imagine if they all joined in and found the ways to cooperate to do that? Right now, they're just not doing it. Maybe you have some answers, Peter. Being a psychiatrist is important. I think we need you.
one of the elephants in the room that I bring up often is that so often we're treating with drugs that which could be so much better treated with human relationships for emotional disorders and with a good improved diet for most of the chronic illnesses, particularly a plant-based diet with low meat and no dairy. So we're constantly going to drugs instead of to exercise, eating better, and human relationship. And the drug just takes over the whole arena and squashes the whole arena. So you don't know what to do about it any more than I do, really, I guess, other than just go, 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 and hope more people will join us and hope what we do will someday be an avalanche and keep trying.
Well, I think one of the big problems, Peter, is that the leadership in our corporation community, like Johnson & Johnson, something went haywire with them. They need to get back to focusing on correcting the way they're running businesses. What is our business community doing? Are they going to spend their time just trying to find ways to sell more drugs? Are they going to try and find ways to do what they're supposed to be doing, curing and helping our people in the United States and the world? They seem to have lost their way. And I'm thinking that what we might have to do is lock more of them up once and for all, so they learn once and for all that they've got to put a stop. They've got to stop this. Where are the corporation boards? Where are the large law firms which defend them in court and come up with new games and plans to bar the public from succeeding and putting a stop to their misconduct? What is going on with them? We've got to find ways to stop them now. That's why I'm doing what I am doing. Right now I represent the city of Philadelphia and the district attorney of Philadelphia in our litigation here on the opioids. And it's just impossible what's going on in the street. We had 169 overdoses yesterday. And every day is beginning to become a real problem for this overdose problem with opioids. And they're coming in from China, they're coming in from South America, and they're being made physically right here in our own cities. So what can we do to put a stop to this? We have to really start talking about trusteeships for certain products of companies where the state is going to have to, as much as you may dislike having the state or the district attorney have to manage some of these companies and some of their products until they get straightened out. That's going to have to happen, in my opinion. We must put a stop to this. These young people that are dying in our streets in Philadelphia, we have a real catastrophe going on here. And so I'm doing my best, but I'm asking your listeners to join with us in putting a stop to this and calling to task those that are engaged in this kind of misconduct and publicizing them. You know, the old stockades that they used to have in the old days? I'd like to have one right at City Hall, in the middle of our City Hall, and put a few a few of these corporate executives right out there for, you know, 5 hours a day, maybe during rush hour.
I want to come back to two questions about what you've been saying. I'm so excited introducing you that I forgot to tell folks that, yes, we're still doing the format of call-ins. So especially, I hope we'll get questions directed at Steve or comments directed at this issue, not about clinical cases and not about, you know, so much of the individual suffering that goes on in this world. But here we have a huge resource in this man to talk about the pharmaceutical industry. So I'd love you to line up asking questions. And somewhere in the next 15, 20 minutes, I'll start taking those calls myself. But you can get on the line here for our and fill up our lines to ask questions. And I hope you will. It's not like this is one of those times when it'd be extremely helpful to have callers. It's just because Steve and I can fill up this time easy. But it'd be really great for some of you to be able to ask him a question. I had two questions I wanted to ask you. Has the federal government, with all the, oh my God, tens of billions of dollars it sues these companies for, have they ever gone after one of them to put them in jail, even though they were, you know, they're responsible for millions of deaths?
Almost never. It doesn't happen. That's number one problem on the hit parade. It's very serious that none of these people ever go to jail in the top corporate executives. And why? I also have a problem, a major problem, with the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA. The FDA is so subject to the political winds of the day and who's running the show that you can't trust what they do. I spend a lot of time exposing the FDA and one of the people there, Janet Woodcock, who heads their pharma division. I'm astonished at what has been approved by the FDA over the years. The opioid epidemic never, and I want to emphasize this, never would have occurred to the extent we have the problem now if the FDA had done its job. They don't do their job. They don't guard the public. And I am sick and tired of that. They never should have approved these opioids. They knew it. And the drug companies from Purdue to Johnson & Johnson to all of them that went ahead and got their drugs approved, they knew or certainly should have known that this was going to turn into a disaster, which it has. Right now we have a disaster on our hands with the opioid litigation and fentanyl and how the public, people who got addicted to these drugs from a simple dental prescription, for example, for Percocets, are now getting and dying from heroin with fentanyl on the streets of Philadelphia and every major city perhaps in the country. And the police are going crazy trying to deal with it. It is so, so difficult. And from autopsies by the city doctors to treatment centers to treat people with addictions and how hard it is to get them to break the addiction. None of this. I want to emphasize this to you, Peter. In my opinion, none of this would have happened if it wasn't for the FDA's failure to stop it and staunch it and do their job properly in the first place. They could have stopped it, and they let it. It's sort of like they let the water come pouring down. It's just unbelievable that this had to happen. And I blame the companies, too, for not taking steps themselves and their board of directors. What the heck are their board of directors doing? What are they doing? They're getting paid to do nothing? And it's just a disaster all over our city of Philadelphia and all over many cities in the country. And the countryside is terrible. We're losing our kids, the teenagers. The kids in the 20s and 30s, no, they're not kids in the 30s anymore, but they're getting massacred out there by these drugs. They take these drugs, they don't realize that they have poisonous products mixed in with them, and the next thing you know, they're dead, or somebody's trying to Narcan for the fourth time to see if they can bring them back to life. We have to do something, and the public and needs to focus on this and go after those who are responsible. If you sit on a jury and you know that they killed somebody or the drug abused somebody with a drug that didn't have to happen, you need to send a message to these companies. Now, I'm telling you, this is just terrible, and I see it every day, every hour, and I'm sure, Peter, you do too.
Steve, get real specific. I'd be very interested to know, what could the FDA have done? Like, we're talking, for example, about the long-acting drug, the OxyContin. Are you thinking of things like that? They never should have been approved, that a fentanyl should have ever gone on the market. What are you thinking of?
The biggest problem with the OxyContin, which is one of the major part of this epidemic, is they approved a version of it that was supposedly not addictive back in the early 2000s. And then they kept expanding the approvals for these drugs that are supposedly non-addictive. Well, it turned out that was a lie, and they knew it or should have known it. The FDA should be taking them off the market right now, this second, tomorrow. They should be removed from the market and a stop put to anybody selling them. And they're not doing that. There's too much politics involved in doing that. And OxyContin, the reason you have all this going on is, had they not approved these so-called non-addictive painkillers, this never would have happened. They approved it. And the medical profession, the painkiller doctors, were out there pushing it as being non-addictive. They should have known that they were addictive. And none of this could have happened to the extent it's going on now. Would we have some problems? Sure, but not the epidemic and the number of deaths going on now of our young people. And old people, by the way. It's just terrible. And if you had, they should actually have sections of newspapers listing who died today, who from an overdose or from not taking, being able to get rid of their addictions. Every day you pick up the papers, you see a famous actor or actress or sports figure. It's not just happening to them. It's happening to ordinary people, ordinary friends, children. And this has got to stop, Peter.
Well, I'm 100% with you, and I'm just listening in awe as you talk. Where does stopping the drug companies and getting the FDA to do its job, where does that fit into the fact that one of the major now areas that the stuff is coming from, like fentanyl, from what I've learned, is it's coming in from China. Could that have been stopped back then? Maybe by, I guess it would have, but by not getting our kids addicted on the stuff being given out by doctors. But is there anything we can do about China and fentanyl right now? Where does that fit into the equation?
Well, that fits in a very substantial way. We need to put more cooperative efforts with foreign governments into tracking where this stuff is coming from and who could be put in jail in those foreign countries if it is, and how they get into the United States, who's involved in the United States in the transport of these materials and drugs. This all started, unfortunately, by plain old Percocets and things like that. And then what happened is we clamped down on them, and then people started going to the cheaper versions of them, from heroin to adding some fentanyl, and not realizing that these were life and death things that they were dealing with right now. And the police can do so much. And you need treatment centers, and we need to get to the bottom of all of it. And we need the cooperation of the public, and we need the cooperation, frankly, of the addicts. those who are addicts are victims, and they need to tell us who is giving them the stuff before they die, not after they die, which is all too often what happens when research is done by the police or their family. How did you get that stuff? They don't tell. We need to know who's doing it, and we need to have them exposed. You know, I wasn't kidding when I said we ought to have a stockade or something in the middle of our city halls and put the people in those stockades during the day so they can be seen. That's what they used to do in the 1700s. Well, maybe we need to reconsider not doing it anymore. I don't know.
I think some company executives would really benefit from that.
And where are they? I said that before. Where are their corporate boards? They need to be exposed. The products, they shouldn't be allowed to just publicize the good products they make and not talk about their subsidiaries, which are causing the problems. And for example, Johnson & Johnson, big name. Everybody knows it for baby powder. Well, guess what? Look, they just got hit for the $500 million verdict, B with a B, for their talcum powder. The fact is it contains asbestos and is causing mesothelioma, and one of the worst things it's doing is it's causing our younger women to get ovarian cancer. And the cases are pouring in. Risperdal, thousands of them, boys, children, put on this stuff. It was basically a heavy sleep due to pill, but it causes causes the boys to grow female breasts. It causes their hormones to get unbalanced. It causes all kinds of permanent problems. It never should have been allowed on the market. But it's still not only allowed, it's on the market right now. And now it's generic. And it's still being sold without, and I tried to get the FDA to do something about it, and guess what? They refused. They absolutely refuse. They don't think there's anything wrong with this boys growing female breasts or their testicles changing or girls getting hormonal problems, getting diabetes. It's just disgraceful.
Tardive dyskinesia. I mean,
tardive dyskinesia, Parkinson's
type syndrome. Enough lawyers interested in this, you know, the deforming, awful movement disorders, which occur probably at a rate of the same rates as in adults, which, believe it or not, folks, you know, we're talking about average of 8% a year of people taking Risperdal are going to get these awful movement disorders that can be disabling.
And that's just one of them. That's the movement disorder. How about up to 12% of the boys growing female breasts? And, you know, they have to get rid of them. They do have to cut them out.
And sometimes they grow back.
Mastectomies. And they can grow back, I'm told. It's just terrible. It's just terrible. And the company acts like, oh, it's not true. Their lawyers go into court and they delay the cases. You know, here in Philly, we have a backlog of almost 7,000 cases of boys who grew female breasts waiting for their date to come up for trial. It's so expensive to go forward with it. And the companies say it's, for us, we save a ton of money by delaying these cases from coming up for trial, making it impossible for the court systems to deal with the thousands of cases. And that's just Risperdal. You have hip implants, also made by a Johnson & Johnson subsidiary and others. You have breast implants now that are becoming a problem again with potential cancer being caused. And, of course, you know, the whole bunch of products that they make. You can go into their corporate 10Ks, they're called, and look at the hundreds and sometimes thousands of cases.
Vaginal mesh is another area.
Vaginal mesh is another one, also made by a Johnson & Johnson subsidiary. Why is that going on? They're based in New Jersey, by the way, in Titusville, New Jersey, and in Pennsylvania. Janssen is a Pennsylvania corporation, a subsidiary of Johnson & Johnson. What is happening? Why are they able to do this? Is their political strength so great that they can just get this through? It's sort of just mind-boggling that this can happen, and it's happening. And you begin to fight it in the court system, thousands of cases. You try to get them to trial. You try to get people compensation. And then there's so many cases, the company executives try, you know, they run the companies long enough that they get a golden parachute, leave, and then it's left to the next group of executives. I don't understand it.
Do you think that the drug companies are able to corrupt the judicial system? They have enough power, money, influence to do that?
Well, I don't know judges being bribed. What happens is you become a judge. You've got to move your cases. You've got to give the both the defendants and the plaintiffs due process and their day in court. And getting that day in court becomes impossible because you're not allowed. And some we're being blocked. We want to try 5 or 10 cases together in the courtroom. Well, they don't, the defendant doesn't want the juries to see 5 or 10 or 20 of the same people in the same trial. They don't know that there's 6,700 pending cases in Philadelphia of boys claiming they grew female breasts. And their lives have been devastated. And these, many of them, some of them are, these are kids that may have had problems when they were younger. And they were given these pills, and they made things worse. They cause, Peter, you know how these drugs can cause suicide and increase the risk of it. It's a real serious problem. And it's sort of like we're sleeping and walking our way through it. And people, the court system, the judiciary, we have hardworking judges here in Philly. They try their best. But then the defense bar, the lawyers, they have a job. They're going to defend these companies because they're obligated to defend them, and they get paid to do that. The only one getting away with it is companies who are making money on this stuff. And the longer they can keep these cases from getting to trial and getting cleared up, the more money they end up making in the long run. And punitive damages. We finally are getting New Jersey. You want to know something about New Jersey? Do you know that the rules, the law has, there have been rules in Jersey that you cannot get punitive damages in a drug company case in the state of New Jersey?
Oh, God. No, I didn't know that.
You believe that? For the people of New Jersey, you better look at your legislators over there and bring them before the bar of justice and say, what the heck are you guys doing? Is this true that we can't punish these creepy companies or these companies who get caught with misconduct for punitive damages in a drug case? How did you get away with that one? How did you get that through the state legislature? Who pulled that stunt on us? When? Who voted for it? They need to be exposed. I think that somebody better take a look at that one. And then the statutes of limitations, they need to be expanded. Like sex, you know, rape, you can get the rape statutes have been expanded substantially. You can't rape somebody and get away with it simply by a 2-year statute of limitations. Well, that should be the way of the until this epidemic is healed, cleared, stopped. The statute of limitations in all pharmaceutical cases should be expanded long term. It should be probably at least 10 or 20 years. That way you can, they know that they're never going to be able to get away with it if they can skate a couple of years in time before the public or the individual realizes they were affected by the misconduct of a drug company or another company. These things have got to be looked at. And they're not going to be looked at.
Folks, 2 years is the usual time you have to bring a suit. And, of course, if you've had electroshock treatment or these heavy drugs, they keep you. They injure you sufficiently to keep you from really being able to bring a suit. And it's usually the family who does. And, of course, if you're a child, you can't bring a suit. And many parents don't know enough or understand enough to bring a suit, or it's too frightening
to
them.
Well, and it's expensive. You've got to take depositions. You just came from a deposition. You sat, Peter, for several hours. Lawyers on both sides. Somebody's getting paying them. This thing is going on for hours and hours and hours, and you can only participate in so many suits, and there aren't a lot of doctors like you that have the ability, and not just the time, the ability to present the cases the way they're being required to be presented today, with all kinds of protections for the due process for the defendants. And then you have this new game that they're playing called freedom of speech. They're allowed to say anything they want as long as nobody can prove it's false. So they say this drug is great, we know it, we did, you know, and they get away with it. And it just
isn't
true.
I didn't know about that. I haven't run into that. Explain that some more. So there's now some case law and precedent that you can say anything you want? I don't know about that. I always thought that you had to be able to prove it.
If you get caught lying, you can hold them responsible, but you got to catch them lying. And if it's just your opinion, and it used to, doctors, by the way, are allowed to prescribe a drug for almost anything they want, even though it's not approved by the FDA for those uses.
Right.
Risperdal,
right,
for example, is prescribed for all kinds of garbage treatments, and you know this is allowed. By our present situations where lawyers for the defense are coming up with new ideas, new games. There's a new game being played, which is a big problem. It's called preemption.
I was going to just
speak
that word. Yeah, tell folks about preemption.
Preemption is a new game played by the drug industry and other industries saying, if our drug got approved by the FDA for this purpose, it means that you cannot sue about it because we've warned about it adequately. And even if you die from this, as long as it's been approved by the FDA, then you're stuck. You're stuck. You can't sue about it. It's called field preemption. And that's a new game that's going on where as long as they can get away with not lying about it, but not telling the truth either. In other words, when I say not telling the truth, I mean exaggerating it, putting it together with a bunch of things. You see these ads on TV now where they list, if you can find out what they've been, what's wrong with them or the adverse events, you got to be a miracle worker. And as long as they tick them off quickly enough and the FDA has approved them doing it, they can get away with it. And worse yet, in the state of New Jersey, you can't do a damn thing about them for punitive damages, according to the courts in Jersey giving this in recent interpretation. I don't agree with that interpretation, but that's what we're facing. So we're off of fighting to prove that what state's law applies, and we don't want New Jersey law to apply if we can have it.
Let me go back to preemption and make sure people understand it. And my simple understanding of it is that if the FDA has approved a drug as safe and effective, you simply can't sue about its being safe and effective. Is it that simple?
It's not that completely that simple, but that's what they're pushing for now on the defense bar. Field preemption is called. Where it's coming down to now is if they don't lie about the drug, let's suppose they say this drug does this, that, and the other thing, and they warn you about it in some fashion, it's in the label, they don't even have to warn you, the user, about it. They just have to warn your doctor about it. So you got to prove, you got to get your doctor to agree he knew about it and still went ahead and killed you. Okay.
Yeah,
in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry to exaggerate a little bit. I get a little carried away.
Well, it's incredibly frustrating. I mean, folks, you can hear in Steve's voice and in the way he's feeling about this how incredibly frustrating this is. I've tried to hold back more on the air. And even in my personal life, from just feeling the frustration, but I don't know if that's the healthier way to go either. But I'm right with Steve emotionally in his frustration and outrage about all of this. And Ginger and I live with this on a daily basis. Steve, can we take it? Do you mind if I take a question? Somebody's got a question.
Sure,
for
go
you.
Ahead. Sure, good.
Okay.
Go right
okay.
Ahead.
Hi, Sarah. Are you there in California?
Hi, Dr. Reagan.
How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, I've got Steve Scheller on my show. I mean, I'm doing great. You had a question for him?
Well, yeah, Mr. Scheller, I think that the problem honestly stems from the 1997 and 99, and then 2009 when the FDA published their guidelines on direct-to-consumer marketing. I think once the pharmaceutical companies were allowed by the FDA to not to direct-to-consumer market with advertisements that don't devote equal time to the risks as it is to, you know, actual promoting of their product, I think that's when everything went to hell in a handbasket.
Well, you're probably right. That was a big problem. Remember now, only the United States and New Zealand permit direct-to-consumer advertising. And in Europe,
too.
UK, and even in Poland and Finland, they can't do that there. But here, we've allowed it. This freedom of speech has become a weapon. In other words, freedom of speech is in our Constitution. We became a country because we wanted to have freedom of speech. But that didn't include the way it's being used today, where it's being used as a defensive weapon by the drug industry and by the industries generally. In other words, they're saying, well, I can say what I want, too. And I can say that this drug does all these wonderful things. If I can show a simple study, as bad as it might be, that may say it's okay. And in any case, my doctor is allowed to give it to me, whether it's approved by the FDA or anybody, as long as it's not misrepresented in a way that falsely makes claims about it. And there's lots of puffing and lots of ways to make claims about things. And that's what's been going on. That's how the opioid epidemic got going, with this false and misleading statements, which are now finally being to be dealt with. But, you know, by the way, you know, some of the top attorneys in the country are defending this conduct because they're getting paid for it. And they're very bright men and women doing this. And how do we change that? You know, how do we protect the public? Where's the public going to get money to be able to defend their rights? It's just not happening because there's just too much to deal with. Too much.
I think the only way to do it is to revoke their funding stream by cutting off the D2C or the direct-to-consumer marketing, because they're
but nobody's going
to
do that.
To the Shirley Amendment as they were to now the direct-to-consumer marketing.
Well, that would be a big help, but it's not happening. It's not happening.
I know. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
This is such a good question. I agree with you, Sarah, that there was a sea change with direct consumer advertising. And as a person, you know, myself, I have a lot of libertarian and freedom of speech feelings that's a big basis of America. But as soon as that advertising began, there was an instantaneous change in who could go on the air to talk about drugs. Before there was the consumer advertising like that, you know, I was like 5 times on Oprah and 6 times on Larry King. I was on every major TV show, practically, and the news, the morning shows. I was on CNN. And I even criticized the president of Eli Lilly on one of the major cable folks, a business channel. Now, no one can get on TV to even say, well, you know, there may be a link between violence and the psychiatric drug, mass violence and psychiatric drugs. Steve, have you seen that sea change where maybe you used to be able to have much more of a public voice?
The way the drug companies are operating now, they threaten indirectly or even directly their TV channels and people that advertise their drugs. We're not going to advertise it. You put Peter Bregan or Steve Scheller or anybody to contest what we're saying, we're not going to fund you anymore. We don't want you to do that. They go to the University of Pennsylvania right here in Philly, where Johnson & Johnson has established just the other day some kind of hub to develop drug products with the university. And, well, obviously, even in the university, they try to block people like experts in the field of drugs to know something about them from saying too much or even getting a chance to say anything. I see that happening right now. And some of our worst entities in terms of allowing this to go on. The university should be protecting the freedom to speak about the and not protect the drug industry from criticism, even if it's partially wrong or they think it's exaggerated. Well, that should be debated. If they think I or Peter say something wrong, then I welcome them to debate it. They should be, those debates should not be blocked. Those discussions should take place. And, you know, Justice Brandeis used to say sunshine is the best disinfectant. And they shouldn't be hiding. They're afraid to let the true story come out then. Why are they hiding? Let's debate. We'll, and let the public decide at minimum. But they don't want to do that. It's too dangerous for them. They'll lose some customers. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. I certainly want to learn whatever they have to say. I want to hear the defense. I want to understand exactly why they claim what I'm saying is, quote, wrong, why these painkillers are okay, why the these doctors or entities that push these painkillers through their organizations, why that was okay. Let's debate it. Let's discuss it. Let's let the information out, and then let's stop the advertising of one side, which is essentially what's going on. This game of reading off a bunch of adverse events, irrespective of which are the most serious ones. And Risperdal, one of the most serious adverse events, if you give a young boy, Risperdal, he has a very good chance of growing female breasts, and you ruining his life. What are they afraid? Why don't they just say that in their label? Do you know that? Look at a Risperdal label. Does it say your boy has a 10% or 5% chance of growing female breasts? And the way of handling that is to do a prolactin test, a blood test, a very simple, inexpensive test. And if his prolactin goes up, you don't give him the drug or you don't continue it. Very simple. Guess what? It doesn't say that. Do you know whether your child is growing female breasts or it's just weight gain? Because they warn about weight gain, but they don't adequately warn, in my opinion, about the female breast and changing sex tissues. Those things aren't warned about. You need to know how to examine the boys and the girls to know whether they're growing tissue that shouldn't be there or their hormones are changing. Guess what? The doctors, how many doctors do you know that when they give a pill for Risperdal begin the process of examining their chests over the years they're on the drug? I know of none.
Oh, they don't exam for tardive dyskinesia, which has been right. Demonstrated for decades.
Parkinson's type syndromes.
Yeah, there's so much. The Parkinson's syndrome. Well, we now know these drugs long-term cause dementia.
We can't get that
in front of anybody, that they're actually dementing drugs and that they actually are shrinking brain tissue. I mean, in Great Britain.
And the longer you're on it, the more it shrinks.
Yeah, that's right.
And the next thing you know, your grandma is being taken care of at home, supposedly because of age, when it's really because of the drugs they were on.
That's right. Sarah, what were you saying?
The problem is they don't establish a medical baseline with any of the scans or like an EEG or a QEEG scans to identify baseline brain activity or like a fMRI or an MEG scan to establish this basic brain structure and brain activity. And then what happens is they prescribe the medication And then patients can then say, well, I'm having changes. I'm experiencing, you know, X, Y, or Z. And the doctors just ascribe it to a worsening of the condition or a worsening of the illness rather than recognizing it's a medication issue.
Oh, but Sarah, you're absolutely right. They don't even do that when they do drug trials. They don't give a neuropsychological test of somebody before they take the drug and then test them during the trial to see what the effect is and then afterward to see if the effect goes away. They don't do any of that stuff. The FDA more and more is clearly a protection agency for the drug companies rather than the public. And it's getting worse and worse, Steve. See, what about another effect, which is that the drug companies now paying the FDA to expedite their approvals.
That's the other one,
talk
yeah.
to us about that. That is so crazy.
Yeah. I want to get a raise. I'm an FDA employee. Let me see whose drug we can find a way to expedite because they have to pay $1 million if they want an expedite. Are you willing to pay the million? Good. Your drug is expedited and approved.
And approved.
Oh, atrocious.
Yeah, it's horrendous.
It is. And these people, they go to work for the drug companies. I mean, the head of Paul Lieber, who was the head of the psychiatric drug section that I went up against for years and years and years. He went ahead and retired, became a consultant to drug companies. By the way, he wouldn't shake my hand when I met him at an FDA meeting. What do you think? What do you think of that? He looked at me and said, I know who you are. He wouldn't shake my hand.
Well, Janet Woodcock's another one, the one ahead of the pharma division. I could have been praying that she would retire and they put somebody in there that will protect the public. But she wrote a report back there when I filed a complaint that gynecomastia of boys growing female breasts is not a serious adverse event. Would you believe she said that?
No, that's really, really, really hard.
And we're getting million-dollar verdicts. The juries know it's a serious. The only person who doesn't yeah. think it's serious is Janet.
Steve, what about the girls? I know your lawsuits, for obvious reasons, are focused on the boys. But this is going to have the same effect on girls, but it's just going to be dismissed as prematurity.
Yeah, well, that's one of the big problems. Girls are not getting proper evaluation because it's hard to tell whether a girl's breasts are growing normally or not, or whether that makes it even more difficult in the case of girls, which makes it even more reason why girls shouldn't be put on a drug which affects their sexual maturity. They should not be put on these drugs, and yet they are. It's terrible.
I know someone who went from a size C cup to, after 17 years of psychoactive substances, including the Seroquel and Risperidone and just a host of these other neuroleptics, the cup size was a double G.
Well, do you know how hard it is to prove whether your double G is caused from Risperidone or a drug product versus is your natural growth as a girl? That's what these drugs do. They make it even more difficult. At least with a boy, a boy's not supposed to be growing female breasts. But, with girls, it's even more difficult to tell when it's wrong and what they should be doing. And the FDA refuses to require it. There must be a basic prolactin level, which is a simple blood test, and if it's and it must be monitored whenever the kids are on these drugs. And if it's abnormal, guess what? You stop the drug. Don't ask questions. You stop the drug.
Wow.
Why would you put my kid to risk like that? If I had a doctor who didn't, and I knew that they were required to do that and didn't, guess what I would do? I'd get one of those plastic guns that they now say they can make. Can I teach them a lesson? I mean, that's how angry it would make me. I'm not saying I'm not crazy to do that. But do you realize how angry a parent would be? And now I see parents whose kids have taken these painkillers and then went on to heroin and fentanyl. And you know how difficult it is to have to meet a parent who comes to you about their child dying their 19, 20-year-old kid, the kid who went to college and even graduated and was on to a successful life and had it destroyed by these drugs, and then they have to come and tell you about it. And it never should have happened. Never should have happened.
We have to, while we're on this topic, talk about my alma mater, Harvard, and how they started this whole thing of drugging children, taking money under the table at Harvard Medical School. And nothing's ever been done to those professors, and they're a bizarre bunch. I mean, anybody that...
Well, they got a warning letter of some sort. I think they were told they couldn't accept...
They didn't bring in enough money, warning letter?
Yeah, yeah. And,
God, I'm so mad at that guy. I've blocked on his name right now. But I think, the first person to ever blow a whistle on him years ago.
I remember you did. Biederman was his name.
Biederman. I know of him. What an ugly human being.
Yeah.
I mean, got physically.
Several millions of dollars for Harvard. As if Harvard doesn't have enough money socked away.
Folks, went out there and created the concept of childhood bipolar disorder, which hadn't existed before, made it such a loose definition that it could include temper tantrums, and then pushed around the country successfully to get children put on Risperdal specifically for their bipolar disorder, which within a few years multiplied the number of kids by 20 times. And I did an analysis of the data, and the children were getting more Risperdal and other antipsychotic drugs for their imagined bipolar than adults during the same period of years with that same diagnosis were getting. Steve, closing remark, I just want to say it's just a delight and a wonder to have you on. And gosh, Sarah, I want to thank you. We just left you on to join the conversation. You added to the show and brought up some new and important ideas. And Steve, any last thought as the music begins?
Well, my last thought is to allow for debate and discussion in public, on TV and wherever, and the pharma industry join in the debate. And we participate together to improve things. If you think my discussion is misleading or wrong, I want to have it corrected. I want to know what they think is right and give them the full opportunity to discuss it with me. The problem is we're not getting that opportunity, and the public's not getting the opportunity. So the real goal here is let's have full transparency. I am willing to hear any discussion where anybody thinks I'm wrong about something. I want to know it. I don't want to be in a position of using freedom of speech to mislead anybody. And so if I'm wrong, that's what I want to know. And I want
to
correct.
We got to end now. Steve Scheller, described as one of the leading whistleblowers. Steve is the leading attorney in this arena, the leading attorney. What an honor to have you talk to my wonderful, wonderful audience. Thank you.
All right. Nice talking to you, Peter.